This is DJ Johnny Juice of Public Enemy and The Odyssey, giving a super big shout out to Valerie Denise Jones in the place to be.
This show is sponsored by myoliveleaf.biz, myoliveleaf.biz, and The Hurricane Report, merchandise and more.
Due to some violent content, parental discretion is advised.
When you get beat up by the police, man, you do everything and you know the law better than anybody.
Man, I have PTSD, man. I was diagnosed with that, man. Just like, you know, something like this never leaves you, you know?
Right. I understand, man, because right after that happened to me, man, I saw the police. I just started running on sight. You know, that I had to go through a lot, man.
I had a fight with the police in 1990. I was 30 years old. And we had a good fight, and man up, man. I'm tired of hearing these punk boys whining, man. Okay, I'm like the judge. Shit happens, man. You don't run from the police, bro. I heard a brother tell me he run from the police. He got PTSD, man. Come on, man. Okay, that's what the judge talking about, man. These Negroes sound like punk cowards, man. Okay? Man up, man. Okay? I'm right on these 1990, man. They sound like some punk-ass cowards, man.
We ain't no punk ass cowards.
Yeah, and you'll be the first nigga knocked out by the police.
You'll be the first one knocked out. I ain't got no damn police. I got a record, man, for fighting the police, bro. Okay, I got a record, man, for fighting the police, bro.
We fought first, homie. And then I started running. I whooped their ass first. That's why I'm still alive. I fought for mine.
I did too. That's good, bro. I did too. I started running.
I started running after I whooped their ass because I didn't want no more fight.
Nah, I stood there and fight, bro. They put a chokehold on me. I went to sleep. But I still but you should have been calling people punks and shit, man. You can't be calling people punks and they went through stuff, bro.
No, man, respect the gang, because ain't no real person going to do that, man. Y'all soft, man.
Your ass is smart
at the mouth, and a nigga getting your ass is seeing your weak ass. Nigga.
Hey, Mr. Wynn.
Hey, man, don't be feeling hurt. Your feelings hurt, man.
God bless you, bro. Your feelings hurt, man.
I'm trying to tough y'all up, bro. You ain't tough enough, shit, nigga, disrespecting folks.
You don't get on the radio talking about you got PTSD, bro. Man up, bro. That's all I'm saying, man. I know y'all. How you know he ain't manned up? I didn't tell you. You should have asked him if he fought first before you assumed, though, brother. Ask first. Hey, my man. Hey, number one. I see most shit before y'all was in the world, man. I'm 70 years old, bro. All right?
But yeah, and it still happens. So that means everything we've been through ain't been a goddamn thing. All these years we've been getting our ass whooped.
Hey, see how soft y'all get, man? I'm getting y'all fucked up, bro.
Don't worry about the white man whooping his ass. He's 70 years old, bro.
Sound like Mr. West got a little dementia from his 70 years.
Hey, it's all good, man. It's all in tough love, man. I just want everybody to be tough, man. You know what I'm saying? Hey, don't take it personal, fellas. I love y'all, man. I love my young warriors, man. That's all I'm saying.
But if you love us, ask us if we fought first before you assume we some punks.
I'm just saying, y'all talking about y'all got PTSD and all that, man. That wasn't talking about.
What that got to do with anything? That's great fighters that got PTSD too.
It's all good, bro. All in the struggle, man. I know y'all, man. Okay, don't take it personal, man. We at war, man. I ain't at war with y'all. I'm at war with these white devils, man.
Well, you call us a whole bunch of punks. It's hard to.
Hey, bro, man, don't take this shit personal, man. Let it go.
No, you can't let it go. If a police shoot me, I'm not gonna let it go. So you took some shots at us.
Well, let it go, bro. Ali, and Mr. West on the real. I've been knowing you for a long time, Mr. West. When you say let it go after you said that, I know again at 70, you just doing radio talk because a person can't put his hands on you. So right now you're talking shit in a safe place. So that's why you say, hey, let it go, man. And you probably feel that way deep down in your heart that somebody saw because you said it out your mouth. But all I ask you to do is don't do that. Because somebody like me who don't got PTSD, or I might got PTSD, if you said that to my face, I'm going to slap the shit out of you, bro.
Hey, there you go. Say vice versa, man.
I'm going to slap your ass.
You ain't going to do nothing but talk, man. God bless you, bro. All right? Now you talking about putting your hands on me. That. I ain't your enemy, man. Your enemy is the white man. I respect your
enemy. You my enemy when you call me out my name and don't know me because you on the radio.
Yeah,
huh?
Hey, guys.
Y'all call wife. I call it shit. Shit happens. Everybody has a different perspective, a different background. No one has the right to say, well, you punks and all that. Man, just let that go because everybody's gone through something. No situation is greater than the other situation. It is what it is.
Thank you.
The key thing is being able to survive, period.
Radio, DJ. One nation, one station.
All right, guys, I am back. Welcome, welcome. Right now, you're listening to the voice of Valerie Denise Jones. Please join me on Instagram at Valerie Denise Jones and also Miss MS Valerie Denise Jones. Let's do some housekeeping. Go on and hit that like button. Hit the like button, subscribe, and also sign up for the alerts. Check to see if you're still signed up for the alerts because, yeah, some goofy stuff has been going on behind the scenes. All right, so I was out for a bit. Wasn't feeling very well after my big move, but I am back here to give you a snippet of a few things that we share on Patreon. I told you guys that I share all the outlandish behind the scenes, you know, the sensitive content, all that stuff on Patreon. Patreon.com/Valerie Denise Jones. Patreon.com/Valerie Denise Jones. All right. So this audio features Nappy Roots, very own our prophet, AKA Ryan Prophet, also, oh my gosh, Chairman Fred Hampton and Joshua Brown. Also, there were a slew of other callers who called in. Big shout out to Wes, Philo the Great, Brother Bernard, Ali. I can't remember everybody's name, so forgive me. Also, please, big shout out to those of you who support this channel. Thank you. Thank you so much for your Cash App. Cash App at Valerie Denise Jones. Nope, that's wrong. Cash App. $Valerie Denise. Cash App, $Valerie Denise. We appreciate your support because we could not do this without you. So all your love, gifts are appreciated. All right, so guys, let's get this party started. Here we go.
Hi, Ryan. How are you?
All right. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I am blessed and favored. So happy that you are here with us today.
Thanks for having me as well.
I tried to kick it off, but as I mentioned, I can't do it any justice. So let us know a few things that I didn't introduce during the intro.
Just again, what you said, I'm originally from Oakland, California. I'm raised in Louisville, Kentucky. I was fortunate to be raised in a two-parent home. Parents been married over maybe 44, 45 years or so now. I have an older brother, a younger sister, all college educated. Whatnot, I was fortunate to make it to college. I ended up going to college in Bowling Green, Kentucky, at University of Western Kentucky, and hooked up with five other brothers that had the same dream of mine, and that's kind of, you know, just making some great music. We all linked up because, you know, at that time, no one had came out as rap hip-hop artists from the state of Kentucky, so we all linked up together and felt that was the strongest way we would all be able to kind of accomplish our dreams. We were signed in 98, didn't come out till 2002. And on our first album, we dropped a single called All In All. Our second album was a single that I actually wrote called Po' Folks. It's 2 times Grammy nominated. That was the first song that the world heard, Anthony Hamilton. Very proud of that guy. And, you know, we sold a few million albums on our first album. My book is called From Gramps to Grammys. Ryan Proffitt, From Gramps to Grammys. You can get it at any platform, you know, Barnes & Nobles. Go to Amazon, in fact, if you like. But ultimately, it's a personal story about me and my life. Talking about a child that always had hopes and dreams to, you know, do some major things and, you know, and was instilled that, you know, my mother and father, they always told me that I really had a major purpose in life in some ways that that I would help others. So, you know, I tell you in the beginning of the story, my mother used to watch Ryan's Hope, which was a soap opera as a kid. And me and her used to watch that all the time. And I used to see how much she really enjoyed and it captured her. And I was like, wow, you know, I really like the way she's just entertained by this. And that kind of drew me to me wanting to be on TV myself. With that, you know, she told me a number of years later that I was actually named after Ryan's Hope. So with that being said, you know, I tell you about story, you know, in the early, you know, late 70s or whatnot. I came up in the household. My father was educated. Mother was educated, but you know they were immersed in a culture where you know the drugs hit really hard, particularly in Oakland, California, and so they were a part of that scene. So there was some substance use involved in the household, as well as you know just everywhere in my community. With that being said, I tell you about some of the things that I've seen. You know, some of the things that I lived through and my experiences, and more importantly, you know, the way I was able to maneuver and somehow be able to accomplish, you know, my dreams and goals and even help a lot of people along the way in becoming, you know, a multi-platinum, 2-time Grammy-nominated artist. So I tell you about different school situations when cocaine in particular hit. Oakland, California. It was normal to see kids be taken out of class by particularly white teachers, and they would disappear or be taken home, and you know they would not come back to the school. You know things would break down because teachers were asking kids, you know, to tell on their parents about this drug use that was going on, or maybe the kid, you know, may have been going to school and in the same clothes every day, and they were actually looking out in good faith in some respect. I also talk about, you know, the Black Panthers with my father. He was originally from in Kentucky, but he moved to Louisville. He moved to Oakland, California, and that's where he met my mother. But he would tell me about stories on how he would see the Black Panthers throughout that time in the early 70s and whatnot. And he said, you know, I remember him telling me that it actually made him feel strong. It made him feel empowered to a certain degree, just to see brothers that was going around that was actually sticking up for other people. So I talk about that. I talk about, you know, being able to make it to college, being fortunate to come out of a 2-parent home. You know, even though there were some things that was going on initially, perhaps my parents had some you know, a couple of bad habits or whatnot, how they were able to clean up their thing and really be a great example for us. And no matter what they went through, they were able to stay together for, you know, like I said, over 40 years now and get us all three to college. And, you know, me, you know, being coming from, you know, hitting the streets myself once I hit to Kentucky, I actually started being a part of, you know, the street life and being a part of that. But I was lucky and fortunate that I still did have a support system in which I could go home to my family and they still supported me and kept me on the right track, even though I was doing all the wrong things. So, fortunately, you know, I made it out of that, and I went from Grams to Grammys, literally.
But why did the cops, why did they stop you in the first place?
Well, they had a roadblock. I was coming back from a show, and I had my partner. He was driving. It was a roadblock. They stopped us, and they asked, you know, had he been drinking. He said he had a beer or whatnot, and they said, okay, we'll pull right over there. So we pulled over to the side of the road. The officer came and got my partner out of the car, blew him, and they said, oh, well, he blew over. He's going for a DUI.
So what happens?
I'm waiting for him, and the officer comes and says, will you step out, please? So I just wanted to let him know, hey, man, I'm all profit of the Nappy Roots, man. I just got done from a show. I've been doing some drinking and whatnot. He said, you just step out of the car, sir. So I step out of the car, and next thing I know, I'm getting handcuffed. They put the handcuffs on me. My hands were behind my back, and he stepped away. And then the other officer pulls out his shotgun, his little electrocuting gun. They call it Taser or whatever. And he says, and he's actually, I think, talking inside his microphone. Said, Mr. Anthony, if you don't comply, I'm going to have to tase you. Yeah. And I'm like, my hands are behind my back, and I'm looking at him like, are you crazy? Like, why are you doing this? Like, what are you talking about? And everything I respond to, he's saying, and he's talking louder on his mic or something. And I'm just looking at him. He's like, well, if you don't comply, I'm going to have to tase you, Mr. Anthony. I'm like, what are you talking about? So why are you doing this? Next thing you know, he shot me. I feel my hands behind my back. I'm on the ground. And then I feel another tase. I'm on the ground. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is going on? And in my head, I'm just like, oh, my gosh, I just got to stay alive. They tase me again. At this time, I just remember thinking, oh, my gosh, they treat me like a slave. I'm about to die. And I couldn't take anymore. I said, fuck it. I'm dead. So I went out. The next thing that I remember, either I came to after that, or it was when the officer grabbed me by my arm and I was being dragged. And next thing I know, I'm being beaten, being put into a cop car. And then they start tasing me and pepper spraying me all over again.
I'm assuming you think, what, this is racial?
I mean, it's definitely racial. I mean, the racial profiling. I mean, even when they locked me up, it was only brothers that they locked up at night.
Are you going to sue?
Excuse me?
Are you going to sue?
Oh man, they have to pay for this. Everybody. It's not even just about me. Everybody. I can only imagine how many people has went through this and they never had a voice. This even is bigger than me.
Oh, my God, Ryan, my heart goes out to you. I've listened to that a few times today, and it doesn't get any easier. A couple things that stood out. Why did you compare yourself to a slave as opposed to anything else?
Well, ultimately, you know, when you're doing a TMZ interview, you realize you only have about 35 seconds to get out what you want to get out. So what I didn't say on there is that they actually made me strip all my clothes off. So what you have is me stripped down into my boxers and my undershirt with my jewelry on. So when they got me out of the car, again, I was a passenger. So no matter if I was drinking or not, it doesn't matter. I was a passenger. So once they find out who they was, they felt like they needed to dehumanize me. And, you know, made an attempt on my life. But they first started by making me take off all of my clothes, take off my hat, take off my jacket, take off my shoes, take off my socks, take off my pants. They did all this and then told me, and then handcuffed me and told me to turn around. So the reason why I compared myself to being a slave, because that's the way that I felt in the last seconds of what I thought was my life, is because I was on the side of the highway, basically naked, barefoot on the highway. So that's the part that many people don't know. I was stripped naked that night.
How does it make you feel when a non-black asks you, do you think that you are being profiled? Like, was it racial profiling? I mean, what does that make you mentally?
in that sense, I understand that he's doing the job, whether he feels this way or that way. He's just asking a question. In this case, whether it's racial profiling or not, this is not what this is about. This is about the abuse that I went under, all because I have a name and I was just a passenger.
I wish I had more time to break that down, what you just said, because I'm trying to get an understanding why.
Well, you do. You do. I guess I can do that extra 15 minutes is no problem.
Why you versus anything else? What do you think happened?
Well, in this particular instance, it could have been someone else, but this happened to be personal because once they had me in jail and we were getting fingerprinted, I was, you know, I could barely, you know, stand up and walk myself. But one of the guys that were behind me said, "Wow, I knew one of you guys was in here because I heard it." And I was like, "What are you talking about? You knew one of us was in here?" He said, "Because I heard over the intercom system, you know, inside the car, the radio, that one of the police officers said, yeah, we got one of those Nappy Root boys." The Kentucky State mm-hmm. Police, you have a lot of racists, and they're involved across, excuse me?
No, keep continue.
Oh, okay. So in Kentucky, you have a lot of racist cops, particularly in the Kentucky State Police. They integrate, you know, there are some places in Kentucky, some small counties and cities that you just don't want to go to. And those people, they may end up going to the Army, Navy, where, you know, particularly the Army, and they come back and they join the police force, and they were born racist. And so when you catch, you know, young black brothers that's successful out there, again, you know, I'm from the city of Louisville, but raised, but went to school in Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is about an hour and a half away. So we would ride this highway. I mean, we've been riding up and down this highway for many years. With that being said, we have a state holiday, so we're very, very accomplished and appreciated and well celebrated for anybody in Kentucky. You know, we rank amongst some of the most famous people there. With that being said, when some people encounter, particularly these police encounter me, you know, I don't know if they had already had it planned at some point that they had it out and they couldn't wait to pull over someone from Nappy Roots, because some other members in the past years had been pulled over at times and whatnot. But nothing ever happened to this extent. So, you know, there is a sense of a jealousy and just downright racist people that don't like to see young black successful brothers. Unfortunately, the way the laws are set up, we don't have that option. They have all the power. So many people don't realize the initial reaction is, oh, well, he had to do something or she had to do something. And many people don't realize just being black is enough. And sometimes, you know, that white racist officer just feels like taking somebody's lives or feel like mistreating them. They can get away with it because that's why they have, you know, laws like qualified immunity. They have these unions that, you know, if they do something, they'll get their jobs back. So, again, I was put in a situation where there wasn't anything that I could do because I'm in their hands. And what can I do? Because anything they write up is going to be said to be true for the most part amongst jurors, especially when you're in a mainly white community. I was in an old country town and just happened to be doing a show, you know, going to host and, you know, do what I do and going back to where I come from. But I had forgot, you know, this particular area of Kentucky is very racist, and, you know, you got to be very wary. I should have declined the appointment. So you find yourself in situations that you actually have no control over. They have all the control. There's nothing that I could do. And that's one of the worst things that that has affected me, the fact that these people could violate me in this way, and I had no way of defending myself. So after they made me strip, and then they handcuffed me behind my back, turning around when they shoot me and I fall to the ground, I'm handcuffed behind my back, and the records show that I was tased a total of 15 times, and I was taken to two locations. I was hogtied. So can you imagine being tased 15 times? I survived, obviously. Thank God. But being, if for those that don't know what being hogtied is, that means your hands are tied behind your back and you're handcuffed, and your handcuffs are connected to your ankles. So basically you flip backwards. So I felt like I was just like some smoking pig and just waiting for them to stop. And so, again, they're in total control. And when something like that happens to you, that's what you hate the most, because you have absolutely no power and nothing to do to protect yourself.
Three quick questions. I just text Chairman Fred, because I know he said he would call in around 4:30. When this was happening to you, where was the driver? Was he experiencing the same?
They had already drove him in a patrol car to jail. So I was left alone on the side of the road with these police officers.
And is there like any body cam, any video footage, and were you able to sue?
Yes. Again, Kentucky is a very, particularly some places, very racist. So they never produced the video. But mind you, I said it was at a roadblock. So you have all these police cars, and they brung me in between two police cars, one, directly behind me and one in front of me. So there was obviously camera, but no one produced the video at all. And again, this was a roadblock. A road stop. So all cameras were there, but I end up having to go through four or five different lawyers, all of them trying to railroad me into pleading guilty to assaulting an officer. Because what happens when you're a police brutality victim, they give you all these misdemeanors and they throw a felony on you where you're looking at 3 to 5 years in jail. And so if you fight against it, then you may be looking at 5 years. Well, these lawyers, because they realized that I would be due such a low, a high lawsuit, and they didn't want to bring this type of exposure, even though they were supposed to be fighting with me, there's always a good old boy network of racism, just like we have across the whole world on the way that we're treated. So it's just a matter of just a couple calls being made, and you think you're hiring somebody in your best interest, but when you have such a incredible craze of a person's life being taken, and then you put on top that he's a celebrity, they put some good roadblocks into me, and they did a really good job, because obviously I don't have the amount of money to fight the Kentucky justice system. No one does. So what they do is they have you go and hire these different lawyers, make you liquidate everything until you virtually, you don't have much at all. And so that's the way that they take your power. They extend the case and whatnot. So you have people working with them, people making deals, and they got me. So what happened is it went to grand jury. And again, they put you with, where you're facing 5 years. I refused to agree. And the grand jury found it was no true bill that I indeed did not assault the officers. So now you have a young man that's been tased 15 times, had his nose broke, is bloody from head to toe, and now you're only facing misdemeanors, and there is nothing you can say that can justify a young man being tased 15 times with a broken nose and bloody from head to toe that he did with a misdemeanor charge. Would you agree?
I totally agree, yeah. And I was wondering how you said that he had called in and he was acting out as if you were attacking him and he was, what they say now, fear for his life. How did that play in front of the jury? Did that help or hurt his case? And what's his status now? Is he still a cop?
So there, I'm sure there's, I wouldn't doubt if there's a brother through this.
Wait, you're breaking up just a little bit. You're breaking up just a little bit.
Yes, they're all still running around locking up brothers and even poor whites as well. And I wouldn't doubt if there's a brother or two that's buried that, you know, no one just heard about the case because, you know, they're able to write down whatever they like. So in this instance, because they know the law, they know how they have to play it. So basically what you're asking about is this man, when he was giving me these commands while I was standing barefoot in front of him, he had one left hand over to his right hand shoulder with the gun in his right hand pointed at me. But he was talking into his mic so there would be audio as if there was being some type of resistance because they're doing this all just for the audio. So when they play it, he would say, Mr. Anthony, if you don't comply with me, I'm going to be forced to tell you. And then the second time he was hiding his voice. And then the third time he was hiding his voice. So it was all just the act, you know, because they know how they need to play the system and what they feel like they can play. With that, I never had my true fair day in court because, again, I ended up, I think, with my fifth lawyer, and he was all about, I don't know, some inside game, too. And so my case has never really truly been heard. I can't speak on it right now, but, yeah, we have some people working on making this a feature film, you know, because again, it's incredible, you know, to be stripped naked and tased 15 times. And, you know, this was the time when Trayvon Martin was killed, and a bunch of other young brothers. So this was 2013 on April 20th, and Trayvon Martin had been killed and a couple other brothers had just been killed. And so for this to happen to me, I would be doing actual conferences and protests at the courthouse, and all the news would show up, and I would be discussing and letting people know what happened. Well, the news channels would all come out and cover my case, and then they would I would go home, you know, looking forward to seeing it on the news so the city and the state would be aware, and they would never air it. So I was like, wow, what is this? And I would call the stations. I could never get any answers why they're not answering my, you know, they're not showing my story, but they're coming and covering me. So I threw another press conference. All the news channels come out and they cover me. And the next thing you know, I go home and they don't air it again. That's when I realized, you know, I actually had some inclination before, but that some word came from high above the powers where they said, we're not going to show our prophets a case because it's going to be civil unrest amongst the city, if not the state, just like it was protests and riots all over. So I was literally blacked out in my own state where I've brought, you know, Grammy nominations. I'm the youngest member on the board of chairman for Muhammad Ali. So when you go to the Muhammad Ali Center in Kentucky in Louisville, you will see my face, my picture next to Will Smith, my picture next to Denzel Washington, my picture next to the Dalai Lama, my picture next to Muhammad Ali. So that's the type of things that, you know, I've been highly honored and revered in the state of Kentucky. And so when this happened to me, they blacked me out of the media in the whole state of Kentucky. That's why many people have never heard this. And that's why I have this book, From Grams to Grammys, on Amazon. That's another partial reason.
At this time, what I'd like to do, 323-646. 323-646.
All right, I'm on.
Your mic is live. Hey, welcome, welcome.
Well, I've been on the highway traveling to Atlanta. And the app took me down 18 miles of Mississippi two-lane road, which was the pits, instead of directing me on the interstate. They do that sometimes. Anyway, the question I have, listening to what I heard, is why did they do this? What was the motive? What do you think their motive was?
Well, there were quite just outright racist white police that didn't like a young black male that was successful. You know, we're known all across the state for doing so many great things. And, you know, in this particular part of Kentucky, a lot of blacks know that they shouldn't be riding through there, or, you know, be careful when you do, because, you know, the KKK is based in this particular area. So, you know, when you go in particular gas stations or particular places, you know, not to stay too long. So just straight up just being white racist and I guess jealous of my success.
How did they know who you were?
Again, what I was told is, see, we were stopped at a roadblock, and other people were asking people where they were coming from. And everybody was letting them know they were coming back from a Nappy Roots or Profit show. This was unbeknownst to me, because, you know, when you just leave and going home, you're not thinking about, you know, this and that. So I was able to acquire that because we actually came from some people and they were in front of us. And after the fact, they let us know that they were asking people, you know, they had let them know that they were coming from our Profit show.
Well, let me ask you this. Why was your driver drinking before he got behind the wheel? See, that you take yourself out of the protected category when you start doing wrong and things happen bad. And see, you're talking about racism and KKK in Kentucky. I drove through Kentucky lots of times 50 years ago when I was 20-ish, and I assure you it's nowhere near as bad now as it used to be. But, I mean, why would they be mad at you?
Again, I can never understand a racist maniac's mind as to why racists do what they do. You know, because they're very sick people, and so obviously we have them in a police force. So when they pulled me over as a passenger, I let them know that.
You're gonna have to give me some better explanation than that. I mean, racist.
Oh well, you asked me why. So I was letting you know. I let them know that I was on profit of the Nappy Roots.
What else was going on? And the other thing, too, did they have body cam or dash cam going on this whole thing? And you're telling me what they're reporting over the radio. Now, I have a speaking suspicion. I know what's going to be reported over the radio, but you say this is an outright fabrication. Now, question I have is, if you got all of these friends of yours pulled over in the roadblock right ahead of you, you are behind him and people are behind you, why doesn't anybody record it? Or why would they be so bold as to take out the person that all of these witnesses have seen in a concert? See, that doesn't make sense to me. That is so stupid as to just be racist or otherwise. You know, that's bad.
Yeah, that's bad. That shows you just how egregious.
What are they saying you did after the fact to justify what they did? This, please, I mean, this is something new to me.
So they said that I assaulted an officer, and so it's in 5 years, and so they said I fought the officer. So it went to grand jury, and the grand jury found no true bill and found that I didn't indeed fight any officers at any time. So the felony was threw out of court, and I was only left with misdemeanors, public intoxication.
What misdemeanors? Did you
public intoxication. Excuse me?
I hope you didn't. From what you're telling me, I hope you didn't plead guilty to any misdemeanor. But what misdemeanors did they leave hanging up in the air? What happened?
Public intoxication and two or three other menial, I don't even remember, two or three other just dumb stuff that doesn't make sense. Their justification was that I was fighting the officers, assaulting the officers, and the grand jury found no true bill.
I know, but you pled guilty to public intoxication.
No, I never had my true day in court where my case was heard. They ran something.
What happened on the day in court? What happened on the thing? Did you enter a guilty plea? Is it still pending? Did it get dismissed? Did everything get dismissed? What happened?
It was some technical on the day of court. It was some technical term they used I'm not sure where the prosecutor and the lawyer, they went in the back room and they came out, and my lawyer came and told me.
If you're speaking to people on a stage, you need to be up on the game, and you need to be able to tell folk what happened to you. Now, if they jacked you up, tased you four times, from what I just got through listening.
No, they tased me a total of 15. They tased me 15 times.
How many times?
They tased me 15 times, sir. It's well documented.
15 times?
15. Okay. 15 times is well documented.
Okay. And what happened to the remaining charges? You're supposed to know that. You don't know? Call your lawyer and find out what happened.
Again, this happened 7 years ago, so I don't remember every exact term.
What do you mean don't remember every exact term? You live in the United States of America. You drive on a highway. When you operate a motor vehicle, you know the rules of the road, know the rules of the game.
Yeah, and so in that, you know, probably you may have never been tased 15 times and beat over the head. You have a lapse of thought sometimes. So that's why I'm saying at this moment, I can't remember the exact term.
Well, okay. But you were in court, so you don't remember what happened to you.
I'm telling you that the exact term was called some type of executive, I'm not fully sure of the term, where it went up to the Supreme Court, and if they felt, I don't remember the term, so I can't tell you exactly again, you know, but I never had my true day in court where my case was explained at all, and they just
the
misdemeanor.
On appeal, or have they been dismissed? What happened?
They've That's been dismissed.
Dismissed?
Yes.
Okay, well then you're proceeding with a civil suit, I take it.
No, they said I had 2 or 3 years to file for the civil suit, and BS happened with that.
Well, why haven't you retained counsel to file the civil suit? You've got the financial wherewithal
to go
after.
Again, I retained over 4 or 5 lawyers over this process because they were all trying to railroad me to pleading guilty to the assault charges. Of course, they went away, but they still it was a big old hoax. That's all I can tell you. A big game was ran on me. Everybody knows this particular area. Again, it's where the KKK, they all, you know, build up, and, you know, they're known for being in this area. I'm from the actual city, so I had came from out of town, so I wasn't thinking about it so much because I'm coming back from Florida, having some good times in Miami, and I think I'm just going to do my job and shoot in and shoot out. I wasn't thinking about really the stuff that gives Kentucky the stigma of how many racist people it is. So with that being said, I fully identified myself when it came to the car. And that's when they said, when I told them I was all property and happy roots, and they got me out the car, that's when the police officer said, oh, so you're the rapper everybody's talking about. When they told me that, I already knew that it was going to be trouble.
Thank you. All right. Very popular. Everybody wants to talk to you.
Let me ask a question.
Officer Travis, your mic is live. Yes, sir.
Valerie.
We get some feedback. Yes, sir. You're live. Yes, sir.
What is meant by Grams to Grammys?
What is meant
Brian
by Grams to Grammys?
That would be for you. Yeah, that would be for you. Uh-huh.
Grams to Grammys. Grams is a reference to drugs. I was born in a city of Oakland, California, and so I began my book, From Grams to Grammys, which you can get on Amazon, by talking about how cocaine hit the city of Oakland in particular, and how drugs were all around my neighborhood, how I was brought up in a house where substance use was prevalent. And so it shows how a person went from these type of circumstances in Oakland, California, all the way to, you know, overcoming a lot of obstacles, going to college, and actually making it to the Grammys and being nominated for two. So that's a quick synopsis.
I thought you might have meant it like Biggie Smalls used to talk about, where he moved some grams in order to get the wherewithal to make his first cuts so he could make it into making grams.
Yes, yes, yes. So I talk about how my parents were raised with the Black Panthers around, and how it kind of empowered them to see the Black Panthers around and, you know, get the support from them and whatnot. So being from Oakland, I kind of grew up with a mind state where I speak up for myself. Moving to Kentucky, it was a lot different because you find yourself with people who are a lot more passive because of the Jim Crow laws and things of that nature. But in Oakland, it's more revolutionary stuff and things of that nature. So I think, I embody some of those good qualities. Therefore, that's why I announced that, I'm the youngest member on the board of chairman for Muhammad Ali Center. No other rapper, but, I'm amongst on the Muhammad Ali Center wall. I'm amongst Denzel Washington, Will Smith, the Dalai Lama, and people of that nature, just to show the people out there to know the type of character I am. I am well celebrated in Kentucky, so that's why I'm honored to be the young chairman of Muhammad Ali Center, to continue his legacy through my career, through my movies, through my music. So with that, that usually, says a lot to people who really understands the legacy of Muhammad Ali, that they don't bestow a person that causes trouble with that type of honor.
Interesting that you knew the Panthers. I recruited Bunchy Carter, John Huggins, Geronimo Pratt, a.k.a. G, Lane Brown, Nat Clark, UCLA. We used to hang and talk a lot. Also, Shermont Banks, chairman of the party down in the L.A. area at first before Bunchy took over. I know some of the Panthers, yeah, and all of the mess that went on with Ron Karinga's US organization. Yeah, okay, so you got influenced by your parents' exposure to the party. That's good.
Exactly. And so, of course we had limited time. I wasn't able to say, you asked, why are you picked out? Well, before I was even so-called before famous and Grammy nominated in this group, I had already won a Supreme Court lawsuit, $1 million prior to. When I won that $1 million for the same similar reason, the lawyer told me and the two other little guys, I would advise you guys to make your wills right now, because people here around here in Kentucky don't like to see young Black guys get this type of money. So this is, I've already been in newspapers where I've been done wrong. So when you ask, I have a track record, and being that I am from Oakland and then became a celebrity, my name is R. Prophet. You got Black Panthers, you got COINTELPRO, you got me on the walls of Muhammad Ali Center. I'm not the average young Black male that walks around in Kentucky, or anywhere for that matter.
So you have filed and recovered on a civil suit for a similar situation before. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, yes. Awarded $1 million in, I think that was probably 2005.
2005. So this happened to you before. Oh, that's rough, man.
No, I was not beat in that case. It was a discrimination case that happened in 1998, but they didn't award us the money until 2005 because they was running that whole Kentucky, we don't want to reward this money on my terms. So they said some judge or something prolonged it another 2 years. But I didn't get paid till 2005. I only say that to say that I have a name amongst, I've already been, my name is, I'm a pretty popular guy in Kentucky outside of many people. You know what I'm saying?
Valerie. Hey, Valerie, is my mic still open? This is Philo the Great.
Your mic is still open. Real quick, Philo, finish your thought, and then Chairman Fred is on the line. I'm looking for him. I don't know which number he called in from, so I can't find him. And then I did want to give some final thoughts from Ali Ali. So,
okay.
Do that while I am looking to find where Chairman Fred is.
All right, thank you. So all I wanted to say is this, our prophet. You said that discrimination case in 1998 wasn't awarded the money until 2005. Now, those people who probably sit on that police precinct, they know that. And when they found out who you was, like you said, you already have a name. You buzz, and they blocked it out in the media, your face, your name. You have a mural in the Muhammad Ali Center. So all this stuff is known to the public. So when they got you and then made the statement, oh, you the rapper everybody been talking about. Not only that, but you already beat us for $1 million and from 1998, and we awarded you in 2005. Now we finna beat you down in 2013. See, when you say that type of stuff, I'm following you, bruh. And the judge even had to say, man, I'm sorry for that if it already happened. But like you said, it was discrimination. They didn't put their hands on you then. But they had to award you money. So they lost. So now they got a chance to beat you for they lost. That's what I'm going to say. Now, it's an assumption. It's a speculation. But I'm going to say they beating you for the, what you did in 2005 and 2013.
All right,
yeah,
thank you for
appreciate that.
Hello.
You know, again, I can't say exactly why other than I'm a big target. And, you know, you're looking at a guy that's, you know, Grammy nominated with $50,000 worth of jewelry on. You had a roadblock, and people are in this small country town done had a good time. And here's the good, let's say, nigga that done brought all these people out. And so they did. You humanized me, humiliated me, stripped me naked, then handcuffed me, then tased me 15 times, tased me 8 times, broke my nose, got me hogtied in the car, took me another place that hasn't been designated, tased me another 7 times, which totals 15 times, then took me to the EMS, then took me to the hospital. They got me on a bed. And as you see me going through the corridor, if you Google Our Prophet ambulance footage, I mean on YouTube, R-P-R-O-P-H-E-T ambulance footage, and you'll see me in my boxers with no socks on, no shoes, all my knees is bloody, my head is lopsided, and the officer walking next to my knee as they're pulling me in the bed, still with the taser attached to me. Still, because I believe he didn't want me telling the doctors that what they just did to me, because they were squeezing the taser gun anytime they felt like it. So if you look at that footage, you will see that I was naked. So then you would understand why would they strip this man? I was my feet and everything cut up. I have no pants on. I'm in my boxers. So anybody has anything to say to dispute what I'm saying, just look at the footage yourself and ask why this man don't have no clothes on.
Correct.
From the street to the jail, Prophet.
It's a Prophet.
1 second.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Prophet.
The one thing
we got.
The one thing. The one
Chairman
thing.
Fritt,
the one thing.
Is that Officer Travis?
Go ahead.
I'm not sure who's speaking.
Yes.
Is that you, Officer
yes.
Travis? Okay, and then after you,
yes.
I'd like to introduce Chairman Fritt. He is on the line here to speak with you, Ryan. Okay, Officer Travis.
The one thing you're going to have to look at, I mean, you're a proper guy and all that, but you got to learn how to stay below the radar, especially in the South. It's a little bit different here, and things can go sideways real quick. And depending on where you're at in the South, some things, like they say, the more things change, the more they remain the same. So you just got to kind of watch yourself. Develop that third eye and just be very smart in the situations that you find yourself in. If you got somebody driving with you, you can't be drinking, period. I don't care if you're at the show or what. I've done a little light security details and stuff like that. I don't drink. Because whoever has me, they're depending on my service or what I'm doing. So you shouldn't have been drinking to begin with. And they should have never pulled you out the car. You're a passenger. Call your cab, send you on your way.
They definitely should have called me a cab and sent me on their way. You're right about that, brother.
All right, guys. That officially wraps Friday's promo. And if you would like to learn more, like to hear the full episode, there are 2 parts. One for everybody who's on patreon.com, you will get the full episode and the bonus feature featuring Fred Hampton, Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. If you'd like to hear that, so then please sign up for the premium packages. All right. And that is at patreon.com, patreon.com/Valerie Denise Jones. patreon.com/Valerie Denise Jones. I told you guys I do that for several reasons. One being that I'm tired of getting strikes on my platforms due to sensitive content and other. The other reason is I am a one-woman show doing all of this on my own. Everything's coming out of my pocket. So all of your tithes and offerings are recycled back into the platform. So please, please, please consider supporting this channel. Please do so either via patreon.com/Valerie Denise Jones or Cash App. Cash App. $Valerie Denise, Cash App, $Valerie Denise, so that we can keep this platform live. Got some great shows coming up for you. Got David Banner. David Banner is going to be in the house on September the 25th. And also Matthew Knowles will be returning here very, very soon. And a few other big names. And we love everybody. It doesn't always have to be a big name. Definitely not. Speaking of love, 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 guys, as I mentioned earlier, I was out sick. I was sick on my birthday. What a bummer, right? But thank you for the blessings that came through via patreon.com. Thank you to all the Patreon members who wished me and my mom a happy, happy birthday. Also, thank you, Fuelo the Great, for your beautiful birthday gift. And also those of you who hit me up on Cash App, Darren Marion, I appreciate you so much. Hurricane Report, thank you, girl. I love you to life. And Nathaniel L. Nelson. Yeah, big shout out to him for his birthday love. All right, guys, I hope that you guys have a great day. Please meet me down in the comment section if you'd like to chat with me. My voice is going out again, so that means I'm not 100% out of the woods. So, guys, please keep me in your prayers. But, yeah, meet me down in the comment section. I'd love to hear from you. And also, please hit the like button. Hit the like button. Subscribe. Tell a friend who will tell a friend about this platform. Again, we need your support. We love your support. We love you. All right. So I am out of here. I will see you on patreon.com/Valerie Denise and or Instagram at Valerie Denise Jones and also Miss MS Valerie Denise Jones. Bye.
My name is R Prophet, R-P-R-O-P-H-E-T, R-P-R-O-P-H-E-T. You can check me out on Instagram, R Prophet Official, Twitter, R Prophet Official, Facebook, Ryan Prophet, and R Prophet as well. And, yes, the book is called From Grams to Grammys, Ryan Prophet, on Amazon or any platform you like. It's a number one new bestseller, and I appreciate you guys for having me.
We're still fighting for the campaign to save and maintain the Hampton House. GoFundMe.com/SaveTheHamptonHouse50 and also Cash App Save the Hampton House, the house that Chairman Fred Hampton grew up in. We'll be in Milwaukee, Wisconsin tomorrow, just in case of Jacob Blake. In fact, our position is just with Jacob Blake, just for tomorrow. Again, appreciation is always an honor to be on the Judge Joe Brown Show.
Did you enjoy this audio? We sure hope you did. Today's show is sponsored by My Olive Leaf. Please visit myoliveleaf.biz to shop for olive leaf extracts, which will assist your efforts to transform your life, detox your body, increase your energy, get restful sleep, and rid your body of antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal properties. Do not delay. Contact the MOL reps today. Please visit myoliveleaf.biz for their full line of olive leaf extracts and moringa products. Oh yeah, for those of you who would like a personal consultation, please call the MOL reps at 612-567-3263. Also visit their website and social media pages for the latest on sales, new releases, and more.
The Hurricane Report. Write it, take action, maintain freedom. Buy their gear, mugs, hoodies, leggings. They got all kind of stuff, right? The Hurricane Report.